Okay,
because it's not as it's supposed to be.
Please, we're up to page 8. I can see the planning clear review. Before we do that, I just note that Councillor Woodhead had to go away for a while. We follow keeping him. Councillor Law is absent. Yes, as I mentioned, this first paper, clean heat, clean air paper. It's about just, this paper is about short-term, the criteria for clean heat, clean air funding under the review of the year plan, which has been recently reviewed, and then longer-term consideration as to how it's going to work in the future. So, ladies, I'll let you introduce the paper.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You're absolutely right. This paper is about how we're going to spend the $120,000 that is left in the Clean Heat, Clean Air Fund, and which is to be used in its entirety next financial year. In the implementation plan of the air quality strategy that was brought to the policy committee in November, we highlighted the fact that the Clean Heat, Clean Air Fund or subsidy program needed to be reviewed to be put in alignment with the strategy. There is another element, which is the launch of a new subsidy program by EECA in July through Warmer Kiwi Homes, and they are going to put a new heating subsidy. So we also have to make sure that what ORC offers complements what the government will offer from that date. The reason why we are doing this review in two stages is to make sure that we are ready to launch a new Clean Heat, Clean Air program consistent with our strategy during or while we are launching the Arrowtown air quality program. So we are launching the air quality program on the 7th of April in Arrowtown. So we wanted to make sure that we were able to be really clear on what we were going to offer in terms of subsidy. And a new subsidy program, so from next financial year, we'll need to reconsider what we offer and how we fund it, and that requires a lot more work that will happen early next financial year. Yeah.
Any comments or questions? Councillor Scott.
This, of all the reports, we had a lot of reports. This is the one that was in my subconscious, just working its way through. And it took a while, because when I first came onto council, it was all about supporting, you know, wood burners as opposed to being forced into electricity. And what we're doing here, well, it's taken a little bit to get my head around. I think what we're doing here is basically saying, instead of choosing a wood burner, and not choosing a pellet burner, because a pellet burner is going to cost an extra $2,000. We're saying, let's take that decision away and make them an equal cost. And through education, possibly saying, well, actually, there's a lot of positive things in this pellet burner and electricity and all these types of things. And by the way, that's the only way we're ever going to get a clean air shed, because this wood burner that I was so attached to in Airshed 1 in Milton is not going to cut it if we want clean air. It's just going to cut it in other areas, and wood burners, you know, sustainable, you know, Dunedin, it's got different dynamics, Balclutha of the East Coast. It's still got a lot of merits, but in terms of Airshed 1 in Milton, it's not going to cut it. So you guys have put your thinking hats on and said, well, if we do the subsidy, we're going to get some significant gains through our modelling. And so on that basis, I'm wrapped. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, really good to have this paper come to committee. And when I first read it, I actually emailed Jadana at Cozy Homes and said, please tell me that this has gone past you and that you've been kept up in terms of, you talked about the government programs coming in, and we've got to make sure ours fit. But also, can you tell us how this fits within what Cozy Homes Trust is also doing, because they do a whole lot of other things which would work alongside, such as insulation and insulation.
Yes, so we have a memorandum of understanding with Cozy Homes Trust. So they know the details of what we are offering, and when they promote or inform homeowners over what's available for them, they can tell us and package it up and tell them, right, you are eligible for this amount of money from government, this amount of money from ORC and all other helps that is available. So we worked really closely with Jordana to make sure that she was comfortable and that she thought it would work. Given her level of knowledge and experience, it was really good having her around the table. So they're really going to have a promotion hat with this program.
So it's really good, because one of the questions I think later on in the report is sort of asking, you know, how are we going to approach this and how are we going to get it out? And I was wondering how much of that partnership could be used to help us, rather than setting up a whole other arm of work for ORC, can we, to a certain extent, outsource some of that to an organisation who's already got the expertise, and they are looking to expand throughout Otago rather than just being on the east coast here?
Yeah, that is right. A lot of the promotion will go through Cozy Home Trust. So as an example, on the 7th of April and 14th of April, I believe, Cozy Home Trust is organising or is having a booth, a stall at the farmers market in Arrowtown, and they will have all this information and they will promote the Clean Air programme and all other education material from ORC. They are also organising a home fair in May in Arrowtown. And again, ORC's material and ORC's communication will be communicated through Cozy Home Trust. So we're really trying to use to the maximum this partnership to get our word out. But there will also be some advertising campaigns through papers, Facebook, etc., by ORC at a higher level, because the Clean Air program is obviously targeted at all the polluted towns in Air Zone 1 and Milton. So there are those two strands of work, ORC communication and Cozy Home Trust. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Look, I think it's I go with Councillor Scott on the basis that this is a bit of a watershed. One thing we've known for years is that any firebox that you can open will be unsatisfactory in terms of the in terms of emissions. Because, you know, people will find new things to put in them. So not being able to do that, if you've got into this scheme, is a great thing. So I think that the principles behind it are really good. I think the way that it dovetails in with at least two other schemes, and you've got a Clutha District Council scheme there and so on, there are a number of angles, a number of ways in which this can be approached. And I think that the being able to capitalise on more than one program is really good. The only thing I guess that I would just like to like us to think about is that I think that making sure that this is working, I think that's a bit weak. You know, I mean, it's the old fox in the hen house thing where we are relying on the guy selling the thing to make sure he's selling the right thing for the right house, you know, that it is the right thing and that it is going to work. And I would like to, and we're relying on feedback from people to say, oh, it isn't quite what we expected. And I wonder whether maybe we do this with that through our compliance people. If we simply say, let's take 10% of those that have been through the system, go visit them, go talk to them, go make sure that in fact they're on a kind of an audit basis, that in fact everything's worked absolutely as it should, rather than waiting for people to come only when they've got a problem. And so a relatively low-key but effective audit function would be really useful. Then I'd be happy with the fox playing in the hen house.
Fair comment, Councillor Speaker.
Forgive me for this being irrelevant, but is it only me? This paper I'm bringing up on my iPad has got somebody's annotations all over it.
Are they green?
They're red.
We fixed that yesterday. It won't happen again. Oh, and I think everybody's getting everyone else's annotations.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I think they're all councillor. They're your scribbles, aren't they?
Yep. Yeah. No. The very people fixed my computer yesterday.
Hello.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So you won't ever get them again.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. It solves the mystery. I was going mad from that.
Any other comment?
No,
I agree. It makes a lot of common sense.
A bit of move, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Seconded by Councillor Kempton. Any further discussion? If not, I'll put it. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Okay, carried.
Thank you very much, ladies. Thank you.
Now, I think the next one, financial report for the 6 months to 31 December. I'm correct in saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nick, do we have any comment on this?
Stuart's just coming up, so he can. He's done the paper, and this is the financial, so the P&L and or income and expenditure, and the balance sheet. Obviously, following this, we've got the 6 month activity report as well. But Stuart's probably got some comments just on some of the key variances in there.
Welcome, Stuart.
Thank you. I thought if the paper's taken as read, I could just go through some of the major points from the report. The report includes a statement of comprehensive revenue and expenses and a balance sheet. The statement of comprehensive revenue and expenses, the year-to-date deficit of $3.9 million is $2.4 million higher than the budgeted deficit of $1.5 million. Expenditure is the main driver of that higher deficit, being up $2.7 million, mainly due to higher transport expenditure. And the comment on that transport expenditure is included in the activity report, which follows. Employee benefits expense, note 8.8, notes that the employee benefits expense is significantly underspent by $956,000, but when we add on the cost of casual labour to that, then that brings that combined variance down to an underspend of $300,000 against a budget of $8.4 million, so that puts that a little bit more in perspective. Government subsidies, note 8.2 notes that the subsidies are up, and again that's related to the transport expenditure coming through at a different timing than budgeted. Investment income took a hit in that first 6 months period. The managed fund return was positive in the first quarter, but then went negative in the second quarter. So overall that was a decline. Since then, the January and February results are showing that that decline has been made up. Those are the main things, I think, in that statement. In the statement of financial position, the two major things that stand out in comparing the December position with June 2018 and projected for June 2019, the valuation of the shares in Port Otago. The valuation at June 2018 was $488 million, approximate figures. The estimated valuation at June 19 is down $32 million on that at $456. The reason is a timing thing, that when the LTP was prepared, obviously that significant uplift in the valuation at June 18 wasn't known. And the only other significant variance comparing those figures is revenue in advance. Because we're partway through the year, we have like half of the rates revenue, which is at that point hasn't been earned, so that's on the balance sheet as a liability. But we're not on that position at the end of June 18 or 19. So those are probably the main points in the report, I think.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good. Any comment?
I move it be received.
Thank you. Scott, any comment? All those favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Right. Public transport. Welcome, Jerry. Public transport's the normal format, an update on the Needham and Queenstown public transport, and then also there's an update on the bus hub. just sort of aware what's happened there after yesterday. So, Jerry, any comment?
Just on the Queenstown, both Queenstown and Dunedin networks are still showing positive growth. The bus hub itself, I'm happy to convey to council that the first morning's operation went seamlessly. Really good public feedback, comment. We're going to be closely monitoring the impact on this afternoon services as we head into the peak time, but we're not anticipating any significant issues. Just for council's knowledge, we are doing a graduated scale-up with the services, so the next round of services to be introduced will be on Saturday, then again on Tuesday, and then we'll be fully operational on Thursday. So things are progressing pretty well on that front.
Scott?
I'm happy to move the staff recommendation to receive this report.
Seconded.
Thank you, Jared, and all the other people, Nick, for all the work that's going on. That bus hub looks really exciting, and the patronage is all pointing in the right direction. Just one question. As a matter of interest, have you got cameras on the bus hub? Like, is there somebody that sort of sits there and analyses what's going on from either a safety perspective or operational perspective? Does it go back to here or something?
Seeing as how the media is not present, we have got cameras in the bus hub. In discussions discreetly with the DCC about getting that integrated into their facility. So it will be monitored on an ongoing basis.
Like, have you got it back here?
No, we haven't, but that's something that we're investigating as well.
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
So it was moved by Scott, seconded by Councillor Noon. Any other comment? Councillor Hope?
Okay, through the Chair, I'd just like to say thank you very much. Also, I think it'd be really nice if you were to pass on to people like Fulton Hogan, the contractors. I understand from one of them that they were there quite late, a couple of nights in a row, getting it all ready. And whether that's true or not, I don't know, but they said for 3 or 4 days it was, you know, a lot of work, and they had to stay behind and do a lot of cleaning up. And the other thing I think it's really good to note is I talked to Malcolm from Richley's, and he said about how Intercity is going to close its office after Easter and move it round by Countdown so that you get dropped off by Countdown and you can just get on a bus, go out to St Clair, wherever you're staying, and everything is really easy and it's all flowing. And I just thought that was really fantastic. And they're excited, you could tell. So, well done.
Yeah, if I can through the chair, it's been very much a team effort. There's been a lot of individuals across the organisation involved. I'd like to recognise the input of the DCC staff as well. They've been tremendous. It's a positive way of working together to achieve the outcome that you see.
I'm just through you a question of Jared. I happened to be down at Community House this morning, so I wandered around the hub and had a look, and everything was, as you say, going remarkably well, and the guy was selling coffee and it was all tickety-boo. The big signboard down by Community House, the electronic signboard, appeared to be working. It appeared to be showing real-time information. Or did I imagine that? It looked like it was.
It's showing information in real-time, but it's the scheduled time it's showing at the moment. So
it's not GPSing?
It's not GPSing at the moment. That'll be integrated with the system once the ticketing system, new ticketing system, becomes live.
I thought that might be true. It certainly looked convincing.
Where's my bus?
Any other comment? Well, as you've alluded to, Jared, it's been a big team effort as Chair, and I'm sure everyone here congratulate you and your team and everyone involved. It's nice to see it finally come to fruition, so well done. Any other comment on the transport paper? If not, we'll move on. Oh, sorry.
I just wondered whether or not we could just have a quick break and have a informal chat about the ERA, the Employment Relations Act.
We're going to do that.
You're going to do that?
Well,
I just noted there's no media present.
The meeting is recorded.
Okay.
And we'll go on the website, so we're there.
Yeah. So you give me a hold on
that. We're going to go into public exclusion.
Yeah, thank you.
Soon. Next we'll move on to the activity review for the 6 months to the 31st December. This is probably the non-financial review. In the attachment, sorry.
There's a cover paper and the attachment with the review.
Yep. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you.
We're in your hands.
Right, so yes, this is a report that reflects organisational activity performance 1 July to 31 December. Obviously, you know, since that period you've had briefings on various aspects of the business, so you obviously supplement that knowledge with this report. Sort of broadly flying over it, there's been incremental improvements, as I've promised, right from the get-go, and you'll see them flowing through in terms of we keep working on that format, and you'll notice that there's some financial graphs in there that I think are a sort of a visual improvement for you compared to what we first had in front of you, and I detected that the dials didn't work that well, so we've kept experimenting on your behalf, and I hope this is working a little better for you. The content-wise, we've got an executive summary in there, again, trying to get to the heart of what might matter and what you're interested in. So, again, I hope that assists you. And looking forward, the big steps and look and feel and content will be, you know, at the beginning of each new financial year when we align with a new set of performance metric in our plan. In other words, with each plan that we roll out, we'll improve our performance measures and how you think about the business and can comment and judge how the business is going. So that's sort of flying over the improvements, and I'll keep briefing you on that because I think it's important. In terms of feedback on this report, we can take questions and answer what we can. If there's anything of deeper concern, I suggest that you direct us on that and we can explore that and bring that back to you and make a good job of that. So, you know, we can take that feedback. Over to you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Mr. Lawton.
Thank you. Thank you. I do really like the look and feel of the graphs. They're really interesting in terms of that particular perspective. Just a specific question around, page 4 in the environment section, highlighted, thank you, Councillor Kempton, that the lake buoys will not be installed this year, and I was just wondering if that could be an update perhaps by Dr. Palmer?
Yes, the delay is due to the logistics of constructing them. It's a single supplier and they have to take time to build. So it's really a capacity limitation of the supplier.
They're starting on the way, though.
Yes, definitely. Yes, they will be done. It's just a capacity issue that we hadn't factored into our timeline for delivery of them.
Yeah, just one comment, I think, that comes out of this is that, I mean, the seams are under a bit of stress. It seems to me so I'm not surprised to see that. I mean, I think we know that there's quite a mixed bag of results in here where we've got effort moving from one area to another in a number of places through this. So in some respects, I know it sounds a bit odd, but I'm given some confidence in that what I'm hearing about what the organisation is having to do to respond is actually being reflected in here. So that all rings true to me. And yes, I did wonder about the lake. Well, you must have had my stuff.
Any other Councillor Robinson?
Just a quick question. With the previous, now and future, I found the key and everything, but I couldn't quite understand if it was just for this financial year or what is the previous, the now, and the future.
So that's relating to, previous was the previous recording, first quarter report that you received, and the now is obviously this report, and the future is what we think at year end, 30 June.
Year end, yep. So during the year. Yep. Thank you.
tries to highlight if we're currently not on track, still forecasting that work will get undertaken.
You know, I thought it was good. There's enough text to explain the reasons. Any other comment? If not, I move to receive the report, seconded by Councillor Noon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Next, we'll move on to the Treasury report. This is basically the report that went to the Audit Risk Committee, who met last week.
Yeah, it was last week.
Last week, yeah. Yep. Welcome back, Stuart.
Okay. The Treasury report really just gives some information on the total of our other financial assets in the balance sheet at end of December of $45.3 million. So, as you mentioned, it was the report, the same report was looked at by the Audit and Risk Committee last week. There are some general comments there and then just some statistics in terms of the composition of the term deposits at the end of December of $24.5 million. Comprising 18 individual deposits, so we just show where those are held, and then a maturity profile of those deposits going through to July 19, and then the next chart is just showing the total of the term deposits and the funds that we have on call. The next graph is comparing the weighted average interest rate earned for the six-month period and just showing what it was for each of those individual months. So we can see there that those have tracked down over time. A little section on the managed fund portfolio showing that the composition of that at $20.8 million and just showing how that compares to under the benchmark, the SIPO allocation, where there are some differences with that. We're in the throes of that managed fund being transferred over to JB Weir, so those variances at that point will be, I guess, looked at once they're transferred over, and that will be a difference. And the last chart just really shows that graphically is the comparison of the actual composition compared to the SIPO allocation.
Okay. Any comment on the Treasury paper?
Through the chair, Councillor Robson has just pointed out the staff recommendation just should be that the Finance and Corp Committee receive the report rather than Audit and Risk. And I'm happy to move that way.
I'll second
that. Any further comment? I'll put that now. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Just one matter that came out of the Audit and Risk Committee the other day, which we said we'd bring back to the full committee, was our interpretation of risk. Council Laws was rather critical of us in that we weren't digging deep enough into the risks that affect the council, when we had quite a discussion on that. And I think the outcome of it was that, you know, we're keen that every decision that's made by whoever in this council, risk is forefront in their mind. So we said we'd bring that back to council. So I don't know whether any of the others that were there want to comment on that. Councillor Scott.
I mean, I wasn't at that meeting, but I had the sense that often when we talk about risk at this table, Audit Committee, when I read your reports, because I haven't attended the meetings, is that it has an emphasis on the financial risk for whatever reason. Maybe that's because the committee it sits sort of under is like the social risk, there's environmental risk, there's all these risks, and financial, you know, you could argue is their last of our worries to a certain degree. Am I right or wrong in that, do you think?
I don't think you are right. There's a risk matrix which is used in, you know, many businesses, and I know over time we've been building that, adding to that, and making it more comprehensive to cover all risk. So it 'tis there, and I know the senior
are the top three risks we've got?
Well, the risk report that's done follows the risk management framework and strategy, or the framework that we've got. So all the risks fall into four overarching categories, of which financial is one. There's operational, which is where a lot of the environmental risks sit. There's reputational. And then there's the knowledge and systems, which includes your staff, a lot of your staff, well-being and health and safety are covered in that. So they're the overarching, but what we do look, the risk report that we do is the corporate risk. So it is at a high level. We're not going into the really specific risks that relate to, you know, down into individual activities. They will sit under the higher umbrella level of risks, if you like. But that was one of the things, and it's covered in the next item, is to accept the recommendations of audit and risk. So it actually, if you look there, it has the things that were discussed. So there were some things around updating the risk register and actually doing a little bit more on bringing back some more detail on some of the higher level specific risks for audit and risk to look at.
Yeah.
And as Councillor Brown just mentioned, one of the things that was also there, which is point two of that resolution, was around adding risk as a consideration to the papers that come to council. Yeah. So the new format for the or the new template for the papers has a consideration section. So when staff go to set up a paper, it will always have considerations that they should then fill in, if it's applicable, to comment on those as part of the paper they are writing. And what we've currently got four, of which there's financial, there's policy, there's significance and engagement, and I can't remember what the fourth one was, but the resolution from audit and risk was that there should be a fifth one added, which is risk, so that when a paper's being done, if there is a recommendation going forward, the risks are considered, and, you know, if there's no risks, that can be stated. If there is risks, it can be pointed out there, and any mitigations that will be undertaken can be outlined there as well.
Okay, so consents and compliance, for example, were graded, let's say, C. You know, a grade of C. Did the Audit and Risk Committee ever identify that that was a risk?
Without having the risk report in front of me, where it sits is we don't have a specific risk that says, you know, consents processing.
That is my point a little bit, is that we say we do it, you know, in all these categories, but do we really? You know, like, I just think that, or maybe I'm just being a little bit tough, because, everything, but I do wonder about it, because, like, consents is so fundamental to what we do in compliance. It's probably one of the most fundamental things as a regulator, and no, there was... Trevor will be able to put us right, but...
Sorry. Yeah, look, I'd just like to comment on that. I think that the difference between... I mean, right at the moment, we've got an enterprise risk matrix, right? And when you're looking at any individual project, the one thing we talked about, there's an expectation that you will assess your risks, and those risks may actually wire up to more than one of the enterprise-level risks, okay? But in any event... Where we, for instance, have had our review of consenting, there were risks recognised and responded to in the course of doing that review. The thing about it was that the reporting and papers that we received about that review did not have on the top of them the risks that it was addressing. That was the only difference. They were certainly being addressed, but they weren't clearly identified at the top of the paper to say there are risks that we're addressing, there might be some risks that we're creating, you know, and so those things would be set up.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is just generally consents wasn't doing that great a job.
Mm-hmm.
And shit, that was a hell of a risk. You know, we're putting out these conditions and they're not right and we're not doing this. And all I, you know, I look at it and think, oh, for example, what's this report? You know, audit and risk. And all I see is audit and risk, blah, 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 short-term investments, term deposits, managed funds.
All that audit and risk can do is establish a platform. It can't have 100 pages of detailed risks against each project. I mean, we'd have audit and risk committees go for a week. Though that is simply a platform that provides guidance to everybody doing every project to address their risks and, in fact, bring them forward in the papers they bring to us. Yep. That's what it is. And when you think about consenting, all those risks were clearly considered because we went and did a review, but the thing was that they weren't clearly stated on the way through, and that's, I think, the thing that's going to change.
Councillor Robertson.
Just wanted to echo what Mr Donaldson just said, which is that the next part where we do the recommendations, we've got quite a detailed recommendation from the Audit and Risk Committee, which goes through the process for risk. So that's when we would discuss this, but I do need to go. And just, it's clear that we're not quite up to date with the risk register, which Mr Donnelly's been doing a great job of updating, but Ms Gardner told us that actually the exec team are working on this at the moment. It's a priority, and in the very near future they'll get back to us with an updated risk matrix plus how it will cascade through the whole organisation, which is what we want, and blah 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 if you get into that in the next section. Yeah.
And having these sorts of templates and frameworks is great as long as all staff who are writing papers have training to ensure that we're getting the best information. We need to know that they know what they are meant to be informing us. So I'm just assuming that alongside all of this there's also training throughout the organisation so that we've got a common language around what risk is and a common understanding of how to both actually interpret it from our end but also to provide it.
Yep, thanks for that. Any other comments? We'll move on. There's no notices of motion I'm aware of. Recommendations from the meetings. We have the recommendations of the audit and this committee, obviously, so someone move that, those for adoption, please. Thank you, Councillor Moon. Second by Councillor Kenton. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against, carried. The next one is a resolution to exclude the public for the reasons stated. I so move. Second by Councillor Moon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.